You're listening to Munch, a podcast and website where we pair meals with movies. I'm Ben.
I'm Andre.
I'm Leanna.
And this week, we're here talking about Alfonso Cuarón's Children of Men, a film that has been in a lot of conversations recently, or has been a film that has been brought up as being somewhat maybe important for the time we are living in, to a certain extent, at least a topic of conversation, and a film that we just got finished watching, which, for a little setup to our audience, we are unsure how this podcast is going to go, because for those that have seen Children of Men, you can understand that the last 30 minutes of that film are a lot happens. It is very intense.
It's heavy.
So this may be a slightly different podcast from what we normally do, and I think that's going to be okay as we either talk through our thoughts, decide to move on, and we don't necessarily know where this is going to end up, which I think is a good little like, hey, at the top.
Yeah. It's going to be different.
It'll be different.
Not too many jokes in this one, I would guess.
No, I mean, we can maybe hopefully get our legs back underneath us as we move on and yeah, find
not,
a
not
respectful...
Not with that attitude, babe. Yes, okay. And.
All right.
Find a respectful transition off of the intensity of this film. But to start out, let's quickly... I'm used to saying, like, let's quickly talk over the food, but our concept for the food...
Let's quickly tease the food.
Yeah, let's tease that food. Our food was to aid fertility and aphrodisiacs.
Help you have a baby.
All in one meal.
Because people have trouble having a baby in this movie, so we came up with a meal that's going to solve that problem.
So we consulted all of the best Yelp threads, mommy blogs. Cosmopolitan, of course.
They know a lot about aphrodisiacs.
I took a BuzzFeed quiz to see if I was basically a fertility doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I had to get 11 out of 15. I got a 10.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I feel pretty knowledgeable.
So in other words,
you were almost considered a doctor of fertility.
Yeah.
It's true. Almost.
And you can assume that we're about 2/3 right. On what were our blog. And we also consulted Gwyneth Paltrow. We didn't consult Gwyneth Paltrow, but we had one of Gwyneth Paltrow's favorite dishes from her cookbook.
And that, yeah. And we can all trust Gwyneth Paltrow,
mm-hmm.
As the fearless leader of Goop and all the jade eggs she has in store.
Mm-hmm.
I think she is very knowledgeable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Learned a lot today. I have like on my desktop, there's just a bunch of screenshots of interesting and different posts from a variety of mommies.
Mm-hmm.
Learned some new acronyms like DH and DD. What's that? DH is dear husband.
Okay.
Oh.
DD is dear daughter.
Daughter.
Dear daddy.
Dear daddy.
Well, put those in a folder, save it for when you're trying for baby. Just you're trying for baby.
Is that the official terminology?
Yes.
When you're trying for baby. And with that, we had a couple drinking rules for this film. The first one was whenever Theo, played by Clive Owen, has a drink in his hand.
Which is often.
I mean,
he plays an addict.
Is an alcoholic.
He is definitely an alcoholic. Next up, Jasper, played by Michael Caine, whenever he has a blunt in his hand, which I think only happens like once or twice in the film.
Yeah, it's memorable though.
Yeah. And then finally, whenever there's blood on the camera, which is not a common tactic for movies, to have kind of the immersiveness of blood on the camera and also kind of breaking that fourth wall of, yes, there is actually a camera in this location and it is documenting the moment. So it's like an interesting placement of it within the world and kind of references that it is an existing element in the world, I feel.
Also, the blood would be on the lens and then it would just disappear.
Yeah.
Without the scene cutting, it was really interesting. So I don't know how they did it. I have to
imagine it is a cut.
Or that they just actually put, like, maybe they overlaid blood onto the scene. Like, maybe it wasn't actually on the camera lens.
Yeah, I don't know how they did it, because there was one scene in particular where there definitely wasn't a cut, or at least I didn't see the cut. It was...
Sometimes those cuts can be very...
Yeah.
Sneaky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, anytime there's, like, a large, like, movement from one across a surface or something is a great opportunity to put in a cut.
Yeah.
So I remember whenever there's, like, a quick movement, that's a prime opportunity to add a cut in.
Because when it disappeared, they were swiping up a staircase... You know, yeah, we're thinking about the same part. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is also just did it.
Something impressive about this film itself. There was a lot of long takes. Yeah. Oh, like, yeah. Some that, like, surpassed a minute, which is very impressive.
Yeah, that last one felt like it was minutes. Maybe, yeah, like 10.
And some very artistic shots as well.
Yeah, some very artistic shots.
Yeah. Well, great cinematography, without doubt.
So we're kind of diving into this film, and I think we are all kind of thinking through it, but I want to quickly open up to quick gut check of, one, probably whether or not you like this film.
So, here's the thing.
Yeah.
I did not like this film. I cannot articulate why.
Okay.
But I did not enjoy watching it. I don't feel great right now. I could not tell you
why
a clear reason why that is.
Yeah.
But I didn't like it.
That's incredibly
true. And I wanted to like it because early on in the film, I was interested in the world that they were introducing. I was interested in the premise. The opening scene is actually really intense. It draws you right in.
What was the opening scene? I'm trying to
him getting coffee and then
the yeah,
right. It's yes. It's a really powerful start.
Mm-hmm. And you find out that the youngest person in the world has died,
and that he was 18.
And the, yeah,
right.
So which is like setting up the world in a really interesting way, and the impact that has on the world, mm-hmm, like starts to immerse yourself in what is happening.
Yeah,
and then a bomb goes off in the city. Like that's all the setting. You find out that a lot was going on that you're unpacking over the next half an hour.
Yeah.
But that is all the setting you need to, like, make you realize, okay, these are the big problems we're dealing with here. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, Leon, I'm kind of in the same camp as you here. And for me, it ultimately comes down to a couple things. Like, I respect the filmmaking process in this film, and it seems very well crafted and interesting,
which makes it harder to feel that I did not enjoy it, because I completely acknowledge that there were some really beautiful shots and very intentional staging and colors and pacing, and I saw all of that, and yeah, still at the end of it I was like, I'm not enjoying this. I'm not having a good time.
Yeah. Like, it's not
like I've got the dog sitting on the couch next to me. I've got a glass of wine in my hand. My like two favorite people are next to me, and I'm not having a great time.
And I feel like some of this film is definitely to set you on edge. It's not a film to please, but I think ultimately, at least for me, what I found myself kind of thinking through was that the imagery it uses and the symbolism of specific moments feels a little heavy-handed in a way that doesn't provide the film with a feeling of a nuanced take. And also to pluck moments in time in our timeline, like going back to 2006, like, mm-hmm, thinking about the torture that was happening at the Abu Ghraib prison, and that very like iconic, unfortunately, and devastating image of a man kind of standing arms to his side with a bag over his head and wearing tattered clothing,
mm-hmm,
essentially being electrocuted in that moment. And then for them to repeat that image as they go through one of the refugee camps and you see the torture that is happening in that moment, it is a weird moment and immediately pulls me out of what is happening on the screen because they are using a symbol that is so placed in our world and our time. And I understand the reason for that because it immediately gives you a sense of what is happening and it has power behind that image and the monstrosity of the police state in that image and kind of how the American complex is placed into that and giving that imagery power. But it ultimately is both a little heavy-handed and so clear what they're trying to evoke from that it kind of loses any sense of subtlety or nuance, and it's just very heavy-handed. Like, here's what you're supposed to feel from this image because you're supposed to feel that, and that's how you're supposed to feel in this scene. And I think there's ways to depict that aren't
so obvious.
Yeah, it's like, and I think as humans, we try to understand our experience of watching a film and how it creates and evokes emotion. And when it is so plainly in view what it is trying to evoke, you as a viewer start to, at least for me in the course of watching this film, start to consider like, all right, what's it trying, like, I recognize what you're trying to feel. I already feel that because I am ideally a human that feels empathy and I see people being tortured. You don't then need to hit me with this very clear image of what is happening.
Yeah, my thought on that was, I mean, maybe you're more in tune with how you're supposed to feel about seeing people being treated like that. But it's when I saw that, I was thinking, wow, they're trying to make me think about how do I feel when the person under the hood is, like, below the hood, they're wearing clothes like I wear. Their skin looks like my skin. This is taking place in... How would I feel if this was taking place at home? Like, right here, where I work, with people who look a lot like me. And, like, It was...
And maybe that's...
Maybe bringing it a little closer to home, because when that stuff's happening in the Middle East, it feels, like, really far away, and you can just turn it off. And when this movie, like, really brings it and sticks it right in front of your face, and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's interesting for a piece of fiction to feel like it has to do that to ultimately get you to feel empathy or, like, a moment of, like, consideration in those moments. I feel like so it is really interesting, and then from that moment the film just never really slows down, and it feels like there's a very interesting tonal difference from like that half and the first half. And I think there's a idea I kind of want to flow with you, because definitely early in the film there's these moments of like levity and trying to infuse almost humor into it.
Yeah, the second half of the film, because we took a break in the middle of the film, and there was a clear shift from the first half to the second half.
Yeah.
And I think it happened almost right where we took our break, because I remember once we sat down, it became such a much darker, much more breathless, less... Like, there was no more humor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering if the director... tried to, like, was it the director's intention that, like, hey, use this moment to realize that you can still have these moments of levity, but that does not take away from the fact that you are still living in a potential dystopia and you need to be constantly aware that these moments of, like, happiness will still happen despite like dread being surrounding you, and you should not use these moments of levity as a salve for what is actually going on. You should still pay attention to the atrocities happening and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I think part of it was, like, I was thinking a lot about World War II in Germany while this was happening, and you feel like it's bad for you. And then I think where the movie really starts to shift tone is when they go into the refugee camp, which to me was making me think a lot of like ghettos in Europe in the 40s. Like these, they're towns. Like this is part of the city that they just sequestered off for Jews to live in this movie, anyone who wasn't British. And it is so much worse over there than you thought it was for you. And I also think some of the levity stopped because Clive Owen's character was no longer just like trying to get through the day, and instead had like a something bigger than himself that he was trying to be a part of. Like he had more on the line than just like, I'm just trying to get through the day.
Yeah. Kind of that idea of now it's like, you want to be tuned in, but being tuned in generally means that it affects your demeanor. So you also want the time away, but you want to be knowledgeable about what is going on in the world. So it's that kind of constant loop. But when you actually like tune in and you are knowledgeable about what's going on and ultimately fighting for something, that kind of, and I think that is maybe kind of a nice corollary to where his cousin was at, who just didn't think about it at all. And he was trying to live this privileged and like perfect life surrounded by
all the world's great art. Yeah, he had like that is David and he had Picasso.
Yeah,
and yeah, he had
that's ultimately meaningless because it's just wallpaper on a mm-hmm. wall to him, because he is not paying attention to like art is essentially human, and when you take a human component out of it and it is just something to fit on a wall and there's no connection there, it's like,
how did you guys feel about Clive Owen?
My favorite?
Yeah, I didn't feel great.
Oh, I thought he was incredible.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
No, I think Liana and I are feeling one way about this film, and I think, Andre, you really liked it.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. And so I could totally see how that would affect our different interpretations of him. Like, he seemed fine. He seemed like somewhat listless, and I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's a good word. I didn't
listless as him as a character in that role, not as the character Theo being a listless character.
I just didn't feel a lot for him during the film, which is weird because he's in a lot of really intense scenes.
Yeah, and I'm like, oftentimes I overthink about it, like, was that the reason? Was he supposed to be, like, fall into the background and ultimately highlight this woman and her child? Mm-hmm. Or, like,
but it doesn't, the lines they gave him and the scenes they gave him didn't make it seem that way. Because, like, specifically I'm thinking of a scene where they're with that group of rebels at the farm. And one of the rebels keeps telling the woman with the baby, this is your decision, this is your decision. And she specifically asks Clive Owen what she should do. And they make this big deal out of like Clive Owen having a, or Theo having, he's the only one that she can trust. And he gives her this advice. And so it felt like he was important. We were supposed to, he was still a focal point, but I don't know. I just, it didn't. And it wasn't just him, too. Like, there were a lot of good actors in this film, and I wasn't feeling anything. Like, Julianne Moore was in it.
Yeah.
And I she just
did not do a lot for me.
Wasn't her best to me. And even Michael Caine was, who's kind of kooky in his role, which is fine. But it just wasn't.
And I probably felt the most amount of emotion out of his death in a weird way.
Yeah.
And trying to stay himself
despite
what
was happening, even though I think his character himself is somewhat despicable, despite providing comfort to this home, but he is essentially there while caring for his wife. Essentially, they're sequestered from the world without any stake in it and just kind of consisting while having and being helpful, but like ultimately is on his own and not incorporate. I don't know.
The character I felt the most for, or just can, I don't know, the one I felt the biggest connection to was the woman who used to be a midwife. She was barely in it. She kind of came in halfway through and then she, well, we don't really know what happens to her, but she,
I think you can assume what happens to her.
Yeah. She's taken out.
Why does she have dreads?
Yeah. I don't know. That was a weird,
it's just like a lot of weird character choices. It's like,
why? A lot of people in that group had dreads.
A lot of people had dreads. That's true.
Maybe it was just style that they were into.
It's just a weird, like, maybe watching these this many years later, like, some of those choices that may have felt interesting and impactful, like, oh, we are making a character choice by giving these characters dreads, which is not a naturally occurring thing in white hair because it is of a different consistency. Like, you kind of have to, like, work to get
white hair.
Yeah. So there's like a very clear character decision in that moment that's like, oh, I'm going to have dreads and I'm going to. And so it ultimately ends up being a weird moment for them.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess we've heard a lot about how Ben and I didn't really like this film. We didn't get a whole lot out of Clive Owen or even other characters. Andre, you had a very different experience. I would love to hear some positivity. It would be really interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was a really well-done movie, and just because I didn't leave feeling happy, I do feel better having watched, like, a better person having watched the movie. It's like, I recently watched Mother, fairly recently, and it was a similar viewing experience where it's painful, but very emotional. I saw a lot of layers in the movie, in analogies they were trying to make, and then trying to tie it to what's going on today, what was going on in 2006. The whole thing felt to me like a nativity story as well, which is interesting because Mother was also a very difficult movie to watch and a very violent take on the
clear biblical connotations as well as connections to our idea of Earth and the planet.
Yeah, but you're thinking about Mary miraculously becoming pregnant, but having to hide, and she wasn't wanted in the country she was in. Couldn't stay anywhere safe, had to have a baby in a dirty, well, she had it in a dirty, like, I don't know what you would call it.
It was a house?
Slum? Yeah, it was like, apartment. Yeah, a bed on the floor in a dirty apartment. And then having to kind of hide that baby from people, the powers that be. Yeah, so it was an interesting, I felt like that was an interesting take.
There's even a moment where Clive Owen asks her who the father is, and she says, I'm a virgin.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Like, clearly hinting at it.
And I think he also said at one point, like, is there an inn? Yeah.
Yeah.
But other than, I mean, yeah.
Like, now that you bring that up, it's like, again,
just a little too on the nose.
Yeah. Like, but now you say that where you didn't.
No, I definitely thought through it. Like that moment when they are walking through and she's holding the baby and all the soldiers are like noticing it and like stopping the violence. Yeah. It's like, we get it.
Yeah.
This is a big deal.
Yeah.
And maybe it's my connection to religion and the like, Ubiquity to give the story of Jesus and the impact that that has, that maybe that doesn't ring as true for me. It's like, I get it. And that's a personal experience that I have with that story specifically. But I think it is an interesting point you bring up. And they definitely, again, like, really hit at that theme of, like, here's a chosen child.
Yeah.
Brought into a world that is not necessarily accepting of it, but is still game changing.
Yes.
Which is not a great terminology to use, but you get the point.
And I felt like Theo's character, it was interesting watching his character develop both over the course of the movie and then some conversations happen where you realize over the last 20 years how he got to be where he is today. Like, he starts out as kind of a just trying to get through one day at a time. Pretty depressed, obviously. Runs into his ex-wife. We see he has money trouble, but that's not the important part. You're just supposed to see, like, it looks like he's doing this for himself to solve his own problems. And he moves past that. He gets, like, a spark of life back when he's with his ex-wife. And she talks about how he used to be an activist, and you see he used to have a kid, and you can see how he does not have a kid anymore, and you can kind of put the pieces together of how he became so despondent and depressed and separated from other people, and then you see him become the great activist who's working for a greater cause that his ex-wife described him as.
And that he once was.
Or like, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was really impressed with how they developed his character without doing like cheap flashbacks, which a lot of other movies do. I felt like I got everything and I'm not saying flashbacks are always cheap. I'm just saying they developed his movie while keeping us firmly rooted in the moment at all times.
There's ways to tell a story that does not include a flashback. Like,
yes.
Flashbacks at times feel like a crutch.
On the other hand,
they take you out of the moment completely, too. Yeah.
To be fair, one thing that did take me out of the moment in this movie was, instead of showing you the flashback, they were happy to tell you. There was a lot of exposition dialogue in this movie, which...
We're going to quickly pan across a photo that has some relevance, and you're supposed to think about it, or it's like...
They're having a conversation that's very
detailed.
Like, yes, about the past. Yes,
like, oh, Jasper's wife. There's a long pan over all of her accomplishments, ending on, oh, she was tortured, and then you see her and her current state. It's like, we see what you're trying to do, and it's this moment of telling this story through newspaper clippings that are like, why. I don't imagine that I would paste up newspaper clippings of my loved one's torture after all these moments of, like, victory. Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm going to include the entire article with an image here.
I would not frame my darkest moment.
And I get there's, like, there's that aspect of filmmaking that, like, there's a certain amount of that to be able to tell a story,
right?
But it's just another thought in kind of what this film is, and this film's kind of definitely interesting in a lot of ways, and kind of interesting in that it wasn't necessarily financially successful, and after this film, the director largely retreats from society in a lot of ways. And
did he really?
Yeah. Like, the next time he basically stopped doing interviews, and then eventually he put out Gravity and did some interviews for that. Then went quiet again. And it's only recently that he's done one or two interviews. And So it's interesting to see the impact of this film, both on him, which was probably an incredibly personal experience and an mm-hmm. incredibly difficult experience, because to immerse yourself in this world on a daily basis and to understand the ins and outs of it and the effect that has on humanity, and whether, and while it is a creation of kind of his mind based off of a story, like to dive so deeply into that subject is incredibly mm-hmm. difficult.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily blame him, but
yeah, I guess my one last thing that I really impressed me about this movie was just its ability to evoke emotion in you, like not and it, with a specific emotion, like most specifically stress or tension.
Yeah.
Done with these long shots with no cuts and intense action, and just how it could change the pace and the way I was feeling about the movie, just with some music, well-placed music, along with a shot, like changing the way they're shooting and changing the music that's playing, making me start to feel tense and then not cutting for 10 minutes. And
yeah, which feel is like a natural breathing. Building yeah. of tension
yeah.
because you understand the level of planning that goes
right.
into those shots. Yeah.
And I feel like we saw that a lot in fairly recently with like True Detective had that one scene I was thinking of where the cops are raiding the city while, or
no, it's like these houses,
the houses
right?
while Matthew McConaughey is trying to get out. And it felt
yeah.
similar to, I was thinking about that in the scene where Clive Owen was trying to escape from the compound and was sneaking past cars and kind of sabotaging his way and finding openings to run.
Or even the car chase before they get to the compound where the camera is like panning in and out of like the back seat to the front seat, outside the car, mm-hmm. back in the car. They're getting out of the car. They're getting
yes.
in the car, back to the front seat.
Yes.
It was very, very cool. It was very
yeah.
well done. I have no idea how they did
yeah,
it because yeah. it felt like they were really driving a car
mm-hmm.
with real scenery moving past them. I don't know. It was.
And, yeah. And then like the camera moving within this tight space.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was
really
interesting. It was impressive.
Yeah. It kind of puts you in a trance in a way. Like this movie, Birdman, and the other movie that did this a lot, The Void. Enter the Void.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All those movies, I would just like had no real concept of how much time was passing. I was just totally sucked into
maybe
what
that's
was going on
maybe
on the
that's why a lot of the emotion just kind of didn't really stay with me, because
mm-hmm.
it does have that trance-like quality of
yeah.
Because I felt this once you said "Enter the Void," it I don't know, it kind of clicked for me, because
mm-hmm.
that was another movie where there's a lot of intense stuff that happens in that film,
mm-hmm.
but the way the camera moves, the smoothness of it, and the length of the shots just kind of, they totally put you in a trance.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so those are my immediate thoughts on the movie, but I'll have to sit with it, like
yeah.
you mentioned, and see how it
yeah, I imagine we're
feels.
All going to kind of sit with it. Like, it's not an easy film to be like, oh, I'm just going to go about my day now.
Yeah, right.
It's just like, my merry old way.
There's a lot of symbolism in this film. Like, oh, there are a lot of things
mm-hmm.
that felt very intentional. There were also a lot of dogs in this film.
There were a lot of dogs.
Animals.
A lot of
yeah,
animals.
Period.
But specifically dogs and a lot of cats.
Mm-hmm.
And they would show.
And sheep. That was another
sheep
herds of sheep.
That was another nativity thing.
And there were animals both in the background and in the foreground interacting with the main characters. Like Clive Owen has three different interactions with a cat where he's either stroking it or it's climbing up his leg or he's somehow interacting, sitting next to it.
Yeah.
There's dogs everywhere. Did that mean anything?
My thought while we were watching was, it's the closest thing they have to babies.
Yeah.
They don't have babies anymore. This is like the
the woman
unintelligent thing that requires you to take care of it.
The woman who helps them at the very end, she's holding her dog very similar to how the woman with the baby is holding the baby.
There's also the puppy in...
Oh, the puppy.
Which is like a very clear like relation to that, but...
And kitten.
Without any like further development of the role of pets within the film, like it's they're never really mentioned, they're never really talked about.
Yeah.
It's hard to... I feel like it's hard to put much symbolism on it.
But whether there were so many.
There is a lot. Like, they're of all sorts. And, like, it's used at times to depict wealth versus...
Right, because when they go visit Clive Owen's cousin, they're driving past the park. And there's
a poodle.
There's that poodle with the...
Irish wolfhounds in his cousin's place.
Perfect Irish wolfhounds.
Oh, God, they were so beautiful.
Very good.
So regal.
Irish wolfhounds.
That was something about... This movie knew what it wanted to talk about and what it didn't. Like, they didn't need to talk about how the world became the way it is, why people aren't having babies, what happened to every other country except for the UK, what really the human project was, why there were so many dogs. So it did leave a lot of questions unanswered, but I didn't feel like they were loose threads because the movie was so intentional about answering about the parts of the story that it wanted to tell and go into, and the rest that is there for environment, and you don't need to care how it came to be that way, but it's part of painting the picture.
Well, yeah.
Kind of like Cloverfield. We just watched the most recent Cloverfield movie, and that one, more than any other one, tried really hard to tell you what was going on in the world, where I like the other two Cloverfields better because it's just, these are the people who are dealing with the situation they're in. We're not going to find out what happened before, what happened after, why, what the government's doing.
The world surrounding it provides impact on the story itself.
Yes.
But you're so focused on the story itself that everything else is very, and they use this terminology specifically, set dressing in that moment, because it just surrounds the scene and builds it out because there's a good understanding of what is happening in each of those specific moments.
Happened a lot with ads in this movie.
They really showed quietness a lot.
Yeah.
As well as that, like, go do your fertility tests.
Yeah, the three messages were like, quietus is okay to take. If you don't take a fertility test,
it's illegal
to not take a fertility test and report all illegal immigrants. Those are the three messages.
Yeah, those were the three messages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a very artistic movie, I felt. Like, very high-budget artistic movie. It's a weird mix of, like, I don't know, the kind of Sundance movie you would see with, like, the budget of a Saving Private Ryan. Like we talked about at the end, the sets were gigantic. And they got, you know, Clive Owen and Julianne Moore. I would be interested in reading more about how this movie was received and how it was shown, because I could see it playing in independent cinemas and not really fitting in there. I could see it playing in major theaters and definitely could see it not fitting in very well there either.
I think it was definitely released to a wide theater audience, and like its budget was $76 million, and it didn't even make that back.
Whoa.
It's a tough one to say to your friend, yeah, you should go watch it. Yeah. Go see it while it's in theaters. Similar to Mother. You're like, I feel like a better person having watched it. It was a powerful movie. I don't know if I can say I enjoyed it, but in that I felt enjoyment while watching it, but I was impressed by it. I enjoyed this movie more than Mother.
That's fair. I think it was better received than Mother was. This has a 92% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
I'd be curious to see the user score. This seems like a movie critics would love and users would have trouble with.
Yeah, I mean, Yeah. I would agree. I think that is probably a good place to wrap up this conversation about the movie itself. I don't specifically have any moments or things we can talk about.
No, I'm good. I mentioned the dogs, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There were dogs.
I thought we could.
And cats.
Talk about. I mean, I briefly thought about, like, we could talk about the idea of quietus as a drug that you can take and that you receive into a in a box, and if things got really bad, whether or not you would take it, but that is not quite the sunny topic.
No.
sunny topic that we would want. So maybe we go out on this statement from CG778. This was in a forum about drinking after pregnancy.
Ooh.
Which I had a large deep dive into.
Okay.
And she says, I'm bringing a 24-pack to get me through labor. Kidding. I wasn't of legal at drinking age with DD, which is dear daughter. But this time, I'm thinking a week or so. After the pregnancy, she'll drink. I've really been craving this wine that Olive Garden has. I'm not a big drinker, so I guess we will see.
Wow.
I just really enjoyed that and her love for a wine that...
Tell me more about this wine.
Olive Garden has that, like...
24-pack.
But let's talk about this wine, because, yeah, like, she specifically has had it at Olive Garden, and I'm assuming mm-hmm. you can buy any wine that's at Olive Garden at, like, your local Safeway.
Yes.
It's definitely a rosé, right?
This was back in 2013.
That was I'm before sure the rosé.
Yeah, fed. Like, rosé was not considered a good wine.
That's probably Chardonnay?
No.
Chardonnay's an Riesling's an easy drinker.
I still think it was a rosé.
Think it's a rosé?
Yeah, because that's why I think
CG778 is a rosé drinker.
That's why I think she doesn't say what kind of wine it is, because she probably had the rosé and was like, what is this? It's not mm-hmm. red. It's not white. It's not what I'm used to.
Mm-hmm.
What is... I think it was a rosé.
I could see that. I like the ideas of her being into a rosé.
So this
I also
really...
like the idea of Olive Garden just... They have this rosé on the menu, and no one ever orders it, because it's not cool yet.
Yeah.
And then,
But this one lady...
CG27?
CG778.
778.
777 was taken.
Yes.
She comes in, and she's like, what's this one?
Mm. She's a woman who knows her wines.
Yeah.
I'm between babies at the moment. I've already had DD, but... Thinking there's another on the way, I should...
Is it always DD, or can it be DS?
DS is a possibility for your son.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Which, there's a Wikipedia entry specifically for DH, dear husband, and it's a way to talk about your husband in a way that is, like, affectionate, even if you're talking about things that frustrate you.
Oh, even if you're talking shit?
So at times it is used okay. ironically, which is really interesting. A little bit of trivia. I went deep on this thread.
Is there a DW? Is there a DW?
No.
Come on.
These forum threads are... Men are not typically seen on these forum threads.
No.
I know. And these threads are also extremely straight.
Okay.
And my guess is also white, at least the ones I were on.
Okay.
So here's another one from... I figured... I saved a couple of these.
Sure. I'm excited.
I think... This will provide a sense of where I was at and how
save it for baby folder.
Yeah. I was like,
trying for baby.
Well, the
are a statement from these women.
A little
which
slice
I,
of life.
They've had a child gestating within them for a very mm-hmm. long time. I imagine that is not easy, and I will.
Yeah, we should
in
make
no
it
way,
very clear. None of us
no.
have kids or have ever had kids.
Yes.
And this might sound really ignorant, but I really don't know the answer. Like, drinking in childbirth. At that point, like, it's not going to affect the baby's brain, right? Because it's on its way out.
There was one comment I read that was like, in the third trimester, you can drink. Which I was like, I don't know if that's the case. But again, I do not know.
I feel like I've heard that. Like, it's actually worse in the first trimester, which is when you're least likely to know. But by the third trimester, there's not as much development going on.
I also read a lot about...
Not an expert.
Yeah. None of us are. Yeah. I also heard a lot about this breastfeeding, which a common terminology is pump it and dump it, is if you drink, pump it, which actually you're not really supposed to do because doesn't actually do anything. So you basically can drink and then at the point in which, and if you can drive, you're generally okay. Mm. But when it's fully out of your system, you have nothing to worry about. There's also strips that can test the alcohol content in your breast milk. I posted a thread to it on Amazon thinking, maybe, should we get this? Which is not a good idea.
So yeah, I'm already, the internet's convinced that I am either like trying to have a baby or already have a baby.
I think all of our ads for the next week are going to be a fun place.
Yeah, the internet's very confused about us right now.
Yes. Yeah.
Tiggy124 says...
I'm sorry, Titty?
Tiggy.
Tiggy,
123 was taken.
Also, Tiggy124 was taken.
Which also would have been fun. FYI, a glass of wine, a beer, and a shot of hard liquor and a mixed drink are pretty equivalent.
True.
I doubt I'll wait too long. Plus... it'll be sangria season. I've got some recipes bookmarked.
What?
She's ready for some sangria. She's a sangria lover.
Okay.
Up next. And here it is. Think about the quantity of this.
Okay.
Okay.
In my birthing class, this is from CatJ16.
Okay.
In my birthing class... they said you don't have to pump and dump. If you're breastfeeding, it's okay to have wine. 3 glasses or less, which is like...
that's a lot of wine.
I rarely ever drink 3 glasses. And you can still
breastfeed. Percentage of a bottle is that 3 glasses?
That's more than half.
Okay. So like, as long as you have less than 2/3 of a bottle of wine...
depends on how big the pores are.
I think if they're your pores, babe. Andre does this thing.
I pour in that I don't want to get back up.
Yeah, Andre does this thing where if we're in one room and the wine is in the kitchen, which is usually how this happens, he'll just pour the wine, like the whole bottle, out into however many glasses he has. So that he doesn't have to get back up. Yeah.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to drink it, that is.
We were.
It works better for reds because...
And notice that tonight, with the white...
you didn't.
I didn't do that.
Look at you.
But last night with the sparkling rosé, you did.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah, you're inconsistent.
Yeah.
All right, do we have any more?
Sure, I've got some blog posts. Okay. As I said, I went deep.
Oh boy.
So first... I really just like the simplicity of this one, and I believe this is how the article started, or the blog post started. No one likes hospital food. Except me. Especially after I have a baby. Yeah.
What do you think the food is that...
Jell-O.
Oh, gross, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
This person likes it, though.
What color? Red?
Red is classic.
I think it's either red or green. I was going to say, or it's green.
It's that lemon lime.
Yeah.
No, all right. Orange? Pass.
Ooh.
I've got one last one.
Okay.
My favorite wine is an orange Moscato from this little vineyard in the Texas Hill.
Plot twist.
We don't visit very often, but the last 2 times... well, we bought several bottles, and both times we have found out we were pregnant shortly after arriving home.
Wow.
No.
Whoa. I'm sorry. So, am I meant to understand here that they go to this vineyard up in Texas, they drink a lot of wine,
more than 3 glasses,
conceive a baby, and then when they get home they find out that they have a baby.
Yeah, but they might have conceived it before they went to the vineyard, which is...
to me like they're saying the vineyard is where...
well, we bought several bottles, and both times... so this has happened more than once.
Twice.
Both times have found out we were pregnant shortly after arriving home.
Okay.
It definitely goes down at the vineyard.
Yeah.
Luckily for you, she clears it up.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Okay.
No, the wine didn't assist us in getting pregnant.
Oh.
If that's what you were thinking. Just a coincidence, people.
Oh, God. I'm just picturing this being one of those old forums where they had the weird animated smileys. They were not emojis. They were smileys.
Yeah.
And I'm just
everyone to can drink. Yes. Can imagine them.
Yes. They're like blinking and making faces.
Turning upside down. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a good place to close out on this podcast. A subtle and highlight and to bring the humors in this room back up.
Mm.
A little bit of levity.
The four humors.
The four humors.
Green, bile, yellow, and blood.
Black, sanguine.
Yep.
like we said, we're not experts.
This has been another episode of the Munch Podcast. You can find our content on Instagram at Get Munched Up, Facebook Get Munched Up, Twitter Get Munched Up, and we actually have a new social media profile. I went in and filled out the entirety profile for us on Letterboxd, which is a specific film and movie based social media service in which you can review. And I went through everything, all of our movies, and uploaded our reviews for it. So
good job.
Everything's in there on date correct as well.
Wow.
So you can go back and look at everything we've done. You can find our Munch rating for Fast and Furious films, our ranking specifically.
Cool.
It's all on there. Go follow us.
See, that's great because the world definitely needed that.
It needed it.
I felt really good about that ranking. So I'm glad that it's now.
And we'll update it.
Yeah.
More movies are coming
out. Just like Ello.
No, babe.
Letterboxd is... I'm actually really digging Letterboxd so far. I really liked it.
I gotta check it out.
Is Ello still around?
Yes, it for sure is.
Wait, what was that other one that we were on?
Mastodon?
That was it.
Mastodon. That's the one.
Which I haven't heard nary a peep.
Yeah, well, any noise the way around. They set it up was pretty wild. We had to be on, the same server as, your friends to talk... nothing.
It makes sense, but it is not a system that works well for mass consumption.
It didn't scale.
It is developed by developers.
And people that want to be on their own.
Yeah. Perfect for social media.
Perfect for social media. As always, we would love your thoughts, comments, and any questions you may have for us. If you have specific thoughts on Children of Men, we'd probably love to hear them. And so you can email us at getmunchedup@gmail.com. We would love to kind of read those live and think through them. And with that was a good conversation. Good day.